Mr. Pop.
The views and opinions of this show do not necessarily reflect the views and opinions of this network and its affiliates.
Hello and welcome to another episode of Straight Out of Left Field, brought to you by DRCP Army, Fatboy Media, and of course, Radio AFS. They bring you Straight Out of Left Field. Today we're going to have a 45-minute show. It's going to be, we're going to have to talk about Roy Halladay and his passing. Then we'll have to talk about the free agent class, who's there, who's not. Briefly mention the one still vacant managerial position, which is the New York Yankees, and who they are going to hire. And it seems to be a little bit of, I wouldn't say a mess, but it seems quite a lot of uncertainty, should we say, regarding that one. And just to wrap up, then we'll talk briefly about Shohei Ohtani. We won't cover him in the free agent class. We're going to talk about him separately and what he means to the MLB. Because he's just been posted just this morning. Found an agent, and MLB have agreed a deal with. Well, they have agreed that the original clause, the posting fee of $20 million, is going to be brought back into play for players who want to make the transition from Japan to the MLB. But first, as we always do, I want to start with our moment in time, and that will actually lead us quite. Will lead us well into our fittingly is probably a better word to describe it, into the section regarding Roy Halladay.
On the inside, strikeout number 11, and Halladay is one out away from completing a perfect game. The 1-2 pitch hit toward third. Castro has it, spins, fires, a perfect game. Roy Halladay has thrown the second perfect game in Philadelphia Phillies history. He faces 27 batters. He retires all 27. It's the 20th perfect game in baseball history and the second one this year.
And one more.
Just about a quarter to eight, October the 6th, 2010, the first postseason game for Roy Halladay. He winds the 0-2, swinging a dribbler out in front of the plate. Ruiz out to get it. The throw from his knees at this time, and it's a no-hitter. Unbelievable. Ruiz and Halladay embrace, and the Phillies again celebrate around Roy Halladay.
Wow. Okay, so they kind of gave you goosebumps. I was watching the video of that playing right there, and that is, even taking away the fact that Roy Halladay died a couple of days ago in a plane crash, the moment of throwing a no hitter in the first game of the postseason like that, it gives you tingles. That was the second postseason no hitter ever thrown. It was in 2000 and, well, in May, as you heard it there, it was 2006, and it was against the Cincinnati Reds, and that's kind of like an iconic video. Just the MLB use it all the time. If you're waiting in between games and you're watching the baseball games on MLB itself, and you have their subscription, that's one of the common videos that pops up between innings. So you can kind of see the imprint that he's left on baseball just in the last 15 years is power. You know, it would be parallel to any other player. You know, his numbers are pretty incredible for a year. You know, for over a 16 year career, he had a career 3.38 ERA. He on average threw 231 innings a season, which is ridiculous. Even when he was at the back end of his career, he was still throwing a lot of innings that most teams at the moment can only dream of. I think later in the show I'm going to talk about the Seattle Mariners and how only two of their pitchers have pitched more than 150 innings. It's remarkable that the longevity of his career, although he didn't rely on an overpowerful fastball, the guy still threw 94, 95 in his peak. He had a career 64.5 games over the replacement. He had 203 wins to 105 losses. And he averaged 17 wins a season. Like, type of consistency that, well, it gets you into the Hall of Fame. And that's where he'll be going, if not next year, if they do put it forward. I know they've done that in the past. They've put their voting forward. If it's not next year, it's certainly when he does become eligible. I think it's in a couple of seasons. I think it's in 2019, I think. Anyway, remarkable career. Two-time Cy Young Award winner, 8-time All-Star. His presence around the clubhouse. I read an article yesterday about what AJ Burnett said to Roy Halladay and how his presence was and his influence over his pitching. And AJ Burnett, not a bad pitcher in his, but when he was in his say prime, the things that he says. I can't remember the quotes in particular, but the glowing report of just how good a teammate he was as well. Then, if I don't know if you have listened to it, but I watched the video where the sheriffs were announcing the fact that he had died. And it was remarkable. He had a personal relationship even with the sheriff's department, the local sheriff's department. They said how great a guy he was, how helpful he was in the community, how humble he was. If you walked into the room, you wouldn't know that he's a 2-time Cy Young Award winner. You wouldn't know that he was one of the best sinker ball pitchers of his generation. A remarkable career, and it's whenever anyone dies at 40, it's way too young. But Roy Halladay, of all the people, it's the least likely person to expect. But I suppose the only real shine you could take away from it is, he did die doing the thing he loved, which was flying, and he died flying his plane, and that it hasn't been released what was the actual cause. I'm sure that will come in months time, but that is a real loss for just for the MLB community, for his own community, and one to remember. And it's actually not the only person in this year. Now, I think last year, and there was the Royals pitcher who died, for the life of me, I can't remember his name. I remember he was the front of the rotation starter in a car crash in his hometown. I think it was in the Dominican, I think. And that was, you know, and then there was obviously the horrible loss of Jose Fernandez as well. And it seems that it does really put baseball into perspective. I'm just trying to think of the Boston player who died. Boston, I'm just looking it up here. He was a 19-year-old kid who died only last week, who was part of Daniel Flores, who was age 17, died after complications from surgery from cancer. Died after complications from cancer. That's just awful. The Boston Red Sox released two statements regarding minor league catcher Daniel Flores. David Dombrowski released a statement saying everyone at Red Sox was shocked to hear that of Daniel's tragic passing. To see the life of a young man with so much promise cut short is extremely saddening for all of us. And on behalf of the Red Sox organization, I'd like to extend our deepest sympathies. I think he was rated quite highly as well in the system as well. So even such a horrible thing that he did pass away, but it's a pretty big blow for the Red Sox organization, who I think he was touted as a potential big leaguer, if not potential all-star. A sad moment, and it's a shame that we're back in this place where another recent major leaguer has died. But again, like I said, it does show that baseball is just another part of our world, and it is very humbling to see that happen. So anyway, Roy Halladay, if you haven't seen some of the videos regarding his perfect game and his no-hitter in the World Series, especially his 20th perfect game on May 29, 2010 against Miami Marlins, those are there's some pretty kind of hair-raising stuff, so it's definitely worth a look at. You can remember Roy Halladay for some really positive things. 12 years at a Toronto Blue Jay and 4 years at Philadelphia Philly. He will be missed. Okay, so moving on from Roy Halladay is going to be our free agent. We're going to talk about our free agent class at the moment. And what I've written down here is, it was a really interesting thing. I think it was John Heyman of one of the MLB Network correspondents wrote in a piece recently. He said that he kind of it brought Brett to life. If the Angels hadn't signed Mike Trout to a 6-year extension 4 years ago, he would have been a free agent this year. And that really does bode the question: what would he have got now? At the time, he would have had 14 more years until he was 40. So probably a 10-year deal, possibly, with some sort of opt-out, opt-in situation, maybe after year 3 or year 6 or year 9. But you could conceivably see him making $30 million a year. You know, this guy is the best. I say $30 million, but actually Kershaw's on that, and Trout probably gives you more wins than Kershaw. And if you adjust that with a wage inflation, you could be looking at 30, 36, 38 million a year. That's absolutely ridiculous. But all of a sudden, it puts a question, you know, if you do sign him for 11 years on that contract, all of a sudden that's a $400 million contract. Now, that is ridiculous. That's a lot higher than Giancarlo Stanton's. You'd have to imagine that his agents would have wanted it to be higher than Giancarlo Stanton's. It does show. It next year, Bryce Harper comes under the gavel, and he could make $40 million a year over 8, 7, 10 years quite easily, and he could break that $400 million threshold. But that's something to remember, that he could have been a free agent, and we could have been seeing that. But that does just put the market. You could say, yeah, the largest contract at the moment is Giancarlo Stanton. I think it's at 367, I want to say, but I could be wrong. It's around 360 odd million. It's ridiculous. Anyway, so of actual free agents and not hypothetical free agents, we have, We want to start with Yu Darvish and pitching. Also, I want to talk about pitching. So I think there's a number of teams who would be interested in starters, and a number of teams that, if they don't get the high-end piece, they will have to be willing to settle for a slightly lower-end piece. The teams that I want to mention are, I think Seattle need another rotation piece. The Dodgers, the Cubs, the St. Louis Cardinals, Texas Rangers, and Who else? I think Colorado probably need another starting pitcher, but I don't see them going into any more deep pockets. But I think, yeah, Cubs, Seattle, Dodgers, Yankees, possibly the Twins even as well, looking for a potential piece at the front end of the rotation. And a lot of this kind of predicting where players are going to end up, it is speculation. And if one player chooses one team or the other, then all of a sudden that team would require another player. And you kind of have two categories. You have a very high-end category, of which there are two players. There are Jake Arrieta and Yu Darvish. And then you have kind of the best of the rest, and that's Lance Lynn, Andrew Kashner, Alex Cobb, who I think he will be the real dark horse here, and he could really merit a kind of surprisingly high contract. And you could even say CC Sabathia as well. You could put him in the same category. But maybe not for the 4 years, maybe for the more like the 2 years. Now, for Yu Darvish, I think Seattle is a pretty obvious shout. And I think also the Los Angeles Dodgers and maybe the Chicago Cubs. Would he want to go back to the Dodgers? I don't know if the fan base would take kind of, I know he had an awful postseason, let's say. He had a very, very good time with them in the regular season. But I don't know if that stigma, if you go straight by the numbers, yeah, it makes sense. They have pockets to do so. They're willing to do so. You could probably pick him up for 6 years, 25 plus million a year. That's, you're looking at kind of 6 years, 40 million, 140 million, sorry. Possibly more, possibly less. I'm sure his agent, we're looking for kind of around the $150 million mark. I think for a pitcher of his caliber as well, I think he's around 30, and the 6 year deal, it's probably what the market's going to give him. I think there's a slight, I think there will be a slight kind of recede in clubs willing to give up that kind of 38 season in a big dollar money contract, as illustrated by, say, Alex Rodriguez, for instance, and his decline, Mark Teixeira and his decline, Even Sabathia, for instance, he probably wasn't worth $25 million last year. But I think Yu Darvish could very easily get $6 million, 6 years, $150-140 million. Now, where to? I think Seattle is. They had the legacy of Ichiro pitching there. They had Hayashi Okuma pitching there. It seems to make sense that they have that Japanese fan base who would appreciate a Yu Darvish going there. Also, think about the front end of the rotation. Paxman, Felix, King Felix, and Yu Darvish makes a formidable rotation in a division that arguably isn't as strong as it could be, and this could be the time that the Mariners really make that push. It seemed like they could have made it this year, but they didn't. I look at the Angels. They probably only have a couple more years until they might even have to then start doing a rebuilding process of their own. I look at the Rangers, and it seems that I wouldn't say they're in free for all, but they're definitely not as good as what they have been in previous years. So then you see only the Houston Astros, and the Astros will be good for a long time. I think the Mariners can really push that American League West position, or potentially even get in the wild card next year with the team that they had. And if they had continued to play well through last year, they very well could have been in the wild card. And I think with the addition of Yu Darvish, all of a sudden that could make them a postseason team, which they would so desperately like to be, as every team wants to be, of course. That's a bit of a silly thing to say, but yeah, Seattle Mariners and for Yu Darvish for me make sense. Also the Cubs, I think the Cubs make sense as well. They need a front of the rotation starter, and I can see that being a Yu Darvish type pitcher. But again, it kind of depends on where the Cubs in Seattle sign someone else first. Because if Seattle then go and sign Alex Cobb, for instance, for maybe a four-year, $65 million deal, they don't need Yu Darvish. Or if one of the two teams gets there first, then you have to go for plan option B, or potentially even the second option. So it does matter which team gets into the market first. The second, okay, so the alternative high leverage option that you can take in this market is that of Jake Arrieta. Sorry, now Jake Arrieta had a really bad year to have a bad year. The final year of his deal, he's been so dominant in the National League over the last two or three seasons. So this year was not a great year to have a 4.5 ERA, I think it was. But again, because of his track record, because it wasn't just this year that he was bad, because he was so dominant over the last few years, and he showed that he did still have his stuff. It just kind of was so inconsistent this year. If a team could get him straight, I could see him ending up back in Chicago. But then also I could see him ending up in LA if the Dodgers are not able to re-sign Yu Darvish, or don't want to sign Yu Darvish if they still have some sort of prejudice against him, dropping that Game 7 and the Game 2. I'm going to go down a dead end there. If the Dodgers don't pick him up or Seattle, I could see. Again, this is without Shohei Ohtani. The Yankees have a bit of money in the bank. They've lost the A-Rod contract this year. They've taken off the Sabathia dollars, and if they don't re-sign Sabathia, now that's a pretty big kind of like moral decision, because he's been such a cornerstone of that team for the last 6 years. And then also the fact that he said, you know, he wants to stay in New York. Is it 6 or 8 years? No, it's far more than 6 years. Sorry, no, he's been in that team since 2009. So that's, 8 years, for the last 8 years. He said he wants to stay in New York as well. That would be a pretty big and bold, gutsy front office decision not to sign him. But if they don't sign him, and say Ohtani gets away, he goes to Seattle, or maybe goes to a rebuilding team. There was mention of him possibly even the Rays, but I think that's, from my perspective, I'll explain that later, a bit ridiculous. That might have just been, I think that was one ESPN columnist putting out an opinion that all of a sudden gained a lot of weight. But anyway, if the Yankees wanted to, I think Jake Arrieta could be that piece, that kind of Chris Sale that all of a sudden makes that team a very good postseason team to a World Series favorite team like what the Red Sox did last year. And all of a sudden the Yankees get the Golden State Warriors title and not the Boston Red Sox. So Jake Arrieta, because he wasn't as good as Darvish this year, I can see the dollars being slightly less, maybe 6 years, $130 million. But or possibly maybe 5 years for slightly more over those 5 years. But yeah, Dodgers and the Yankees for me would be, in certain circumstances, the ideal fit. Now whether the Dodgers get hold of Darvish before that or go and sign someone else, or if the Yankees decide they want to pursue Ohtani or they want to put more like an Alex Cobb and save the dollars for the next year's free agent market, I could see that, and that makes a lot of sense as well. And you could see Jake Arrieta ending back in Chicago, although he had that pretty warm send-off. So in his final start in Chicago, he kind of tipped his cap, and it was almost like he was kind of conceding that he wasn't going to be there next year. So that's going to be a really interesting one. I think the fact that I haven't seen a lot of reporting on Jake Arrieta, I do get the opinion that he could end up in a lot of places from what I've seen. That's really in. So those are two kind of elite pitching positions that, could kind of go either way. Now we're left with the infielders, and we have Eric Hosmer and Mike Moustakas. With Eric Hosmer, it's very obvious where the best fit is, and that's in Boston. Mitch Moreland played first base for the Red Sox last year, and he was good in parts, but he wasn't good enough over the entire year. They still have the hole where David Ortiz left. I think I can't see any other place any other kind of situation where Boston don't make a significant offer to Eric Hosmer, who is. He won a Silver Slugger Award at first base this year, and he is a free agent Silver Slugger, which I would have thought goes a long... Yeah, he is. He's first base Silver Slugger for the Royals. That would go a long way. Also, because of the kind of face of the franchise personality that Eric Hosmer, I would say, is in KC, they have a lot of personalities. The Salvador Perez, the Mike Moustakas, who's also up for free agency. I have to say that they have to keep one of them. Now, it was inevitable that they weren't going to be able to keep Moustakas and Hosmer. I don't think that's possible. They're not a particularly high market team, but I do think that one of the two will stay. Now, in my opinion, that's going to be Moustakas, because Eric Hosmer is such a good fit for the Red Sox because they need that first base help. There was talk of possibly the crosstown rivals in New York picking him up, but I think Greg Bird is going to be given the 4 year. He was very good in the postseason. I don't see that happening. Mike Moustakas, however, I see a position in LA. There we are, LA, the Los Angeles Angels of Anaheim. That's a mouthful. CJ Cron could be a definite replacement, and then if you include Moustakas in that Angels lineup, all of a sudden you have Trout, Cole Calhoun, Andrelton Simmons, Moustakas, and then that's what you're left with, which is a very strong first four, and Justin Upton. Sorry, I forgot about him. He's the new free agent signing, but he's the. So the Angels signed Justin Upton, who they had traded for from the Tigers, who had a very good year last year. And all of a sudden, you have a very, very strong first five with Trout, Moustakas, up Calhoun, Simmons. You have 35 home runs from Trout, 35 home runs from Upton. Cole Calhoun's going to hit for a decent average and solid power. Simmons is probably going to have 20-odd home runs, I would have thought. And then Moustakas, who hit almost 40 home runs last year. That could be a real lineup, a real force for that lineup. And then all of a sudden you have, if Seattle pick up Darvish, you have the Angels coming on, and then you have the ever-present Houston Astros. That AL West could be a very, very exciting potential. Now, we have a caller at the moment, so I'm just going to put on hold. I'll be right back. All right, okay, so I am back. We're going to have a caller in 10 minutes. We're going to talk a little bit about Aaron Boone and the New York Yankees and their managerial position. That's going to be fascinating. First of all, about the trades, going back to the trades, so we say, yeah, Mike Moustakas in L.A. would be a really interesting proposition. I don't see them with a need for – there was a little bit of talk about kind of Boston, how that might fit in if they didn't get Hosmer, but I think with Rafael Devers there, and you want Moustakas playing his best position, that's not going to happen. Now, other free agents on the market that aren't relievers, which we're going to have a little mention. We're going to have Lorenzo Cain. I see him actually ending up in San Francisco. Why do I see Lorenzo Cain ending up in San Francisco? Because they've had serious outfield issues. Now, if you listened to our show, I think it was one of the first shows, we talked about the issues that San Francisco have had in the outfield. I know I've just said issues in the outfield twice. What are these issues, you're probably asking me? These issues are that they have had some awful route efficiency. They haven't made particularly much errors, but they haven't thrown out runners. They haven't got to balls that have landed quick enough. They haven't just sabermetrically defended their position well. And that's really difficult in San Francisco when you have that strange-looking outfield with the strange kind of jagged corners out in deep center, the inside-the-park home run alley, the triple galore space. I know there's a name for it. I can't think of it. I think if you put Lorenzo Cain into that outfield, all of a sudden it becomes a lot better. And that's why I can see a fit. I can see a fit for him in San Francisco. Also, I can see a fit in going back to KC because he's a slightly more budget option than some of the other free agents that they're releasing. Well, have gone to free agency. I wouldn't say they're releasing them. Interesting thing about Cain. I read about him about a year ago. It said that he only picked up baseball when he was 17 or 18 years old. So a real athlete all around. There's a little interesting fact about Lorenzo Cain. So relievers, David Holland, elite reliever, Colorado Rockies, turned down his $15 million club option, turned down his $17.4 million. Let me explain this. When you go to free agency, you have your club has the option of offering you 17. It's the median for the top 100 players, the median salary. And this year it's $17.4 million. So if you elect free agency, it's because you've turned down this option of $17.4 million for a 1 year deal. It's part of the collective bargaining agreement. He turned that down. Now, if he's turned down 15, he's turned down $17 million. That for a reliever tells me that he does not want to be in Colorado. So where is he going to end up? Now, the Cubs, the Nationals, St. Louis, or even the Astros need some bullpen help. Think about the Nationals here. They've had some real struggles with Mark Melancon and his recedence inability. I could see him going to St. Louis. I can see him going to the Cubs because Davis, their closer, is going to be a free agent. I can also see, look at the Astros. Although they won the World Series, their weakness was in their bullpen, and they could really use an elite piece to go up with Giles, who really capitulated in the offseason and who isn't just a single by himself enough to carry a team like, say, an Orlando Chapman did 2 years ago in the World Series. And you can really rely on a reliever like that. So Derek Holland, Davis, I think those two guys are going to fit somewhere between the Nationals and St. Louis and the Cubs. And possibly the Astros, and I think it could be a bit of a fight. I could also see Dave Dombrowski in Boston signing one of them to a big money deal just to relieve that pressure on Kimbrel, because it seemed kind of throughout the end of the year that Kimbrel was being relied upon more and more, and he was giving up more and more runs because of that. Even in the postseason, I think I wouldn't be surprised if Dave Dombrowski is a bit aggressive and goes for one of those two. Now, if your team has been left, if your team has been left with a player without a starting pitching or is still in need of starting pitching, Alex Cobb, Lance Lynn, CeCe Sabathia, and Andrew Cashner are all available. And they're all, I think, Alex Cobb and Lynn will probably get maybe a 5-year deal. Cashner, possibly 4. Sabathia, a 1 or 2 year deal. There is some talk that actually, because he has, because of his performances in the postseason, because of the longevity of that he's managed in his career, actually, well, not longevity, but kind of like the way that he's rescued his career, he's become into a cutterball pitcher instead of his kind of power pitching stance. He could be able to elongate his career a couple more years, as long as that season, seeing as that knee has managed to hold up through this year. I think Texas will need to have a replacement for Cashner. That could be Cashner, that could be someone else. I think definitely St. Louis needs a starting pitcher. The Rays, that's the interesting thing about Shohei Ohtani and the Rays, because they're going to bring Alex Cobb. And then again, the Yankees are going to have that one space if they don't get Ohtani, or maybe even if they do get Ohtani, they could have a run at one of those, any of those three guys, Cobb, Lynn, Cashner, or even CeCe Sabathia. I don't think it'd be doing any injustice to have any of those three guys. So I'm going to move on now. I'm going to mention Shohei Ohtani very briefly, and then we're going to talk about managers. We've got 13 minutes left. Perfect timing. We're going to talk about, just for 5 minutes, we're going to have a little bit of talk about Shohei Ohtani. Now, Shohei Ohtani is the Japanese version, supposedly, of Babe Ruth. The guy has hit, he's a career batting average of .286. He has a .358 on-base percentage and a .560 slugging percentage. He's hit a whole number of home runs. It wasn't seen that he had a lot of power, but in the last couple of years, he's hit, I think, 25 and 30 home runs or something ridiculous for a pitcher. It's a lot of home runs. But his real selling point, I would have thought, is the fact that he can throw a ball 102 miles an hour, which is ridiculous for a starter. It's ridiculous for actually for any pitcher. And he's had a career ERA in Japan of 252. I think even though it was in Japan, look, it's a slightly smaller ball, so hitting-wise, I would have thought it would have been more difficult. Also, they throw a lot more off-speed pitches, so I think the idea that just because they're not as... I don't say it's a different type of baseball, but I think it's equally as difficult. And look, the way that so many good Japanese players have managed to stay good in America, in the MLB, says that I think Shohei Ohtani is an unbelievable talent and will continue to be so in the major leagues. And whichever team can pick him up, look, however they pick him up for 7 years, it's going to be way below market value for him. That just his batting average and batting statistics alone would probably get him a contract, kind of a $15 million over 5 or 6 year contract. At the moment, he's going to be limited to a signing on bonus because he's under 25. Now, the collective bargaining agreement makes it very clear that an international player under 25 cannot be signed for anything more than exceeding the international signing bonus fee, which is capped, I think it's $4 million. You can trade that. You can trade parts of that cap to other teams, which the Rangers and the Yankees actually have done over the postseason. And that's why over last year's postseason, which means they've actually ended up with Texas have a $3.5 million, Yankees 3.25, Minnesota 3.25. Now, that gets eaten away by fines, by restrictions, depending on how much money you spent on free agents. For instance, Colorado only have $10,000. If they wanted to sign Shohei Ohtani, they'd have to pay $10,000. So he really wants to play in the MLB because he's going to lose significant money. He's going to lose, say he was to sign for a six, like Masahiro Tanaka, that's $150 million over 6 years. He'd probably get a little bit more because he can hit. That's seriously impressive for a pitcher. He could end up, perhaps he could have been very close to that $200 million mark, which is a lot of money to give up for someone who, at maximum over those 7 years with the arbitration at the end of the four, could potentially only make until he can during the arbitration, you can then elect to negotiate a longer contract. But he might only make 10 or 20 million in the next 5 years, even with performance bonuses and things of that, which is ridiculously, it was remarkable. You know, next year, if he is in the MLB, he'll be only earning 500,000K. So I say only, but you know, that's peanuts for teams, players like that. So he's making a significant financial cut to play in the major leagues. And this is why I think it might be important for him to come to New York. Not because that Hiroki Kuroda is the advisor to the GM, or Dihideki, I think Matsui is a special advisor as well, because Tanaka's there. But because of just the brand exposure that your name gets being in New York. And the amount of money that he could make then past that, and the potential to then make it to the postseason next year, and then the short poach in left field, it just makes sense that he ends up in New York. And for once, it's not because the Yankees outbid. But again, there's lots of other teams who may be able to give them a better pitch. Texas, for instance. Minnesota, who will be able to match that 3.5 million mark that will be offered to him out of the signing bonus. But again, maybe money won't even matter. Maybe the size of the signing bonus won't matter, and a team like Colorado could pick him up just because of a pitch, because that financial restriction is so great. And then what's made this all possible is the Major League Baseball has agreed a system where it's not going to be 15% of the signing bonus that's going to go to the team, but it's going to be that $20 million, which makes it a lot more financially kind of incentivizing for his team, the Ham Fighters, to post him in the first place. And that can be a real stumbling block. It is a lot lower, however, though, than what Boston played for Dietz Game Out Suzuka. They paid $51 million to sign him just to negotiate with him. So that gives you kind of an idea how, I wouldn't say unstable, but kind of complex and frustrating it could be for some teams to sign players. But yeah, it just makes sense that Shohei Ohtani ends up in New York if he has an agent. The posting fee has been agreed, the amount. All that needs to happen now is that the Yankees, who have had an interest with him, sign him. And for once, it won't be down to money. However, again, he may not sign, in which case that could lead Arrieta, Darvish open to a move to the Bronx. But this is an exciting time if you're a Yankee fan, but even more exciting time if you're a Japanese baseball fan, because more Japanese talent in America. So, we're going to move on to managers and what we've seen. We've mentioned it slightly yesterday about managers, and we have someone calling in at the moment. Hello.
I called about 10 minutes ago and about the discussion about the Yankee manager.
Mm-hmm. Hello.
Yes.
I'm
still here.
Your name, sorry?
I'm sorry. It's Lou from New Jersey.
Lou. Hello, Lou. How are you?
All right.
Fantastic. Well, now, what's your opinion on this manager situation? Because we've seen a number of managers, Alex Cora, for instance, from Boston, all being signed with promises of being more communicative and having better player relations. Do you think that's important for New York?
Oh, absolutely. But, of course, we need someone who, knows more about the team inside and out, more from like a longevity standpoint. And I don't really think Boone is the way to go. I mean, he was only on there for a brief time.
I
think we need someone.
He's better
I think
to keep his cult status and not try and ruin it.
Exactly.
Yeah, I mean, definitely.
He had, his one brief shining moment, but that was it.
Yeah. So
and
for those who don't know, Aaron Boone was traded to the Yankees in 2004, I think it was?
2003.
2003, and he hit a very, very important home run in the postseason to beat the Red Sox, which kind of earned himself the third base role. He busted his knee playing pickup basketball, and that led to the signing of Alex Rodriguez. So a real cult legend in Yankee spheres. But yeah, he was interviewed today. What do you think of Rob Thompson? Because so Boone might get an interview. So we've had Rob Thompson and Eric Wedge getting interviewed. What do you think of those two choices? Now, Rob Thompson being the bench coach who probably has a better, more kind of player relation side of it, insider knowledger, and then we have Eric Wedge.
That makes a lot of sense. The bench coach making
Yeah, or what about Eric? This guy Eric Wedge, who has this kind of more professional kind of, I won't say professional approach, but experienced approach. He was a manager in 2005 with Cleveland. Or how about even, there's been talk of John Flaherty or David Cohn, who are two presenters who seem to have very good analytical skills.
I would probably go with maybe Cohn on that. I mean, he was with the Yankees.
He does come off quite well
on
television, doesn't he?
Yes, especially on July 18th, 1999.
Oh, yes. Well, again, even more history than Aaron Boone with the perfect game. Even more
the perfect
Yankee
game,
folklore.
I saw that
wow.
As it happened.
That's pretty amazing. That's amazing. That is tremendous.
And I also remember
Idea of Cohn, because I think he has really good – he has kind of a whole capacity, really. He seems to have really good player relations. He's got a fantastic – analytical mind, and he's he knows how to pitch as well, which is something really important.
I hope so.
You know, I think. But again, maybe we're not giving Rob Thomson enough credit because we don't listen to him on the television.
Well, yeah, so that is kind of like underrated. And I also remember the Boone home run. My friend and I were driving home. We had to get for work the next day. We had the radio on in the car, and when we heard that go off, we heard the voice of Charlie Stein. Oh my goodness! I don't believe what happened here. We went completely nuts.
So,
anyway, so
would
I was
you
thinking
agree
of
that,
another
like,
candidate.
Yeah, go on.
How about Willie Randolph?
Yeah, definitely. I don't know how much Cashman values the kind of knowing the people. I won't say knowing the people already, but having a kind of a personal relation. But I got the feeling with Joe Girardi that it was almost that he couldn't control him to a certain extent, and it seems with lots of these new kind of younger managers who are hired for their communication skills, I think, and I said this last week, I think it's some of it is a ploy just to have a manager that they can control a bit better.
Yeah, that is, I think, part of the plan. But you know, Willie has the experience; he knows that team inside out. Was on the World Championship teams.
Yeah.
So I think it'd be a great choice.
Yeah, definitely.
I was thinking
Pinoa
too, but he's not interested.
Yeah. Well, look, Lou, I really thank you so much for your call. I have to agree with you. You know, Aaron Boone should probably stay being an ASPN analyst and keep his cult status and try. I think it is burning it off a bit too much to be a coach. And please, you know, next week, feel free to call in. Please do a bit more. You know, this is fantastic. It's been such a great conversation with you. Yeah. Same time next week, next Friday. And that goes for everyone. Thank you so much for calling in and listening. Thank you.
Thank you.
So, yeah, that's my I think that's my take on it as well. I think Rob Thomson or David Cohn will be the better choice for this kind of this more communicative style and someone who has a really good understanding of the clubhouse. So, same time next week, again, Friday, straight out of left field. I think maybe by that time we might even have an answer to this puzzle of who should be the manager. So once again, Radio AFS on Fatboy Media and DRCP Army. I've been Jack Pollard, and thank you so much for listening, guys. Have a good one.